ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
And this is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program. More than 100 cattle from the Territory died while on a ship to Indonesia. And it looks like botulism was the cause. Today, you'll hear from those who are investigating the matter.
That has included sending veterinary officers to the registered establishment that prepared the cattle. And it has been identified that a number of cattle has also died within that facility.
And the Aileron Bush Weekend has been postponed because of the wet weather in Central Australia. But organisers can see the positives and have a plan B ready to go.
We'll definitely have more competitors on the new date than we would have if we were running it this weekend, because we have a lot of competitors that come from stock camps up on the Barkly, which, some of those places are under a foot of water at the moment.
Yeah, what is the new date for the Aileron Rodeo Bush Weekend? You will find out today on the Country Hour. A big show today. I hope you can stick around. We are broadcasting right across the Territory on the ABC, streaming online, and g'day there if you are tuning in via the podcast. The Federal Department of Agriculture is investigating a shipment of cattle to Indonesia where more than 100 stock died while on board the Brahmin Express vessel, which sailed from Darwin Port earlier this month. Industry groups say the cattle came from the one property in the Northern Territory, and it's assumed the toxin botulism is the cause behind these deaths. Australia's chief vet, Beth Cookson, spoke to Kath Sullivan about what is happening now behind the scenes.
As a part of the investigation into the cause of the mortalities on the vessel, the department has been working closely with the exporter and the Northern Territory government to understand why that disease, why the mortality event has occurred. That has included sending veterinary officers to the registered establishment that prepared the cattle, and it has been identified that a number of cattle has also died within that facility. So we know that the signs that are being expressed are consistent with botulism.
Yeah, the industry suggested that botulism could be the cause or was the number one suspect, I suppose. How prevalent or how common is it that you would have mortality rates on a live export ship caused by botulism?
Well, botulism is a common bacteria globally, including in Australia. It's only under very specific environmental conditions that the bacteria starts to generate a toxin that essentially when eaten or is contaminating water creates this condition in cattle. And so what we suspect has occurred is that the exposure occurred prior to export and that the cattle, when they were inspected for export were not showing any clinical signs of disease, but that disease developed once they were on the livestock voyage.
What's the incubation period?
The incubation period can be up to 17 days after exposure. Often it's more quick than that, but what we do find is once the incubation period has completed and the animals have been infected by the toxin, that the rapid onset occurs and the animals then die quite quickly after that.
So it is fatal in cattle?
Usually it's fatal. We would say that more often than not, animals that have been infected will die of the toxin. There is no specific treatment for botulism once the animals have been exposed to the toxin. Some animals may recover through supportive therapy by making sure that they've got food and water and shade, but that's not the usual that's not the usual outcome.
But there is a vaccine that could potentially prevent botulism in cattle, is that right?
Yes, there is a vaccine that can be used in cattle and is commonly used in Australian cattle. That's why we don't regularly see mortalities at this scale.
And just to be clear, because I understand humans can contract a form of botulism too, but what we're talking about here in the livestock is quite a separate disease, and that if humans are handling infected livestock, it's highly unlikely that they will in fact be infected or sick. Is that right?
There are a number of different types of botulinum toxins, and people are not usually susceptible to the ones that affect cattle. What I would be saying is that meat from clinically normal animals in herds affected by a botulism outbreak is safe for human consumption.
And when will we know, when is it likely that the department will be able to confirm this suspected botulism or otherwise?
The investigation is ongoing. Botulism is usually diagnosed by veterinarians through the way that the disease is expressed, the clinical signs on the ground, as well as excluding a range of, you know, other potential causes.
That is Beth Cookson, who is the chief vet of this nation, speaking to Kath Sullivan. Now, Rob Williams, he's the chief vet of the Northern Territory, and he's actually in the middle of a meeting as we go to air. I am told that he'll be ready to speak to you in the second half of the Country Hour. So, Rob, making himself available to come onto this program to talk about this a bit after 1 o'clock today, which in ways is good. It means that you've now got time to send through any questions that you might have about this incident. So if you've got a question that you'd like to put to the Chief Vet of the Northern Territory, send it through on that text line 0487 99 1057. He's in a meeting now. As you would appreciate, he and his team have been very busy since this incident was made aware. If you've got a question for him, send it through on that text line. Now, the Chief Executive of the Australian Livestock Exporters Council, Mark Harvey-Sutton, he's been asked if he's got any concerns about what this incident could mean for trade with Indonesia. And this was his response.
Look, it's our objective and the Department of Agriculture's objective to be very clear and transparent with our Indonesian trading partners. I know that the Department of Agriculture has reached out to colleagues in Indonesia and has explained the situation and also the circumstances that would have led to these deaths, and they are working very cooperatively, and they have given an undertaking to be very transparent and open with Indonesia, which would be our expectation as well.
Do you have an understanding about what might happen to the remaining cattle that were part of this shipment?
No, I don't, and that will all have to be determined. It's all very early days, Kath, but we will certainly be working through that, and the exporter will as well as this progresses.
Can you tell us how many cattle have died on the voyage?
Look, your initial estimates of over 100 is correct to my understanding, but final numbers are all to be confirmed as through that Department of Agriculture process. But I should emphasise, Kath, that it was the exporter that self-reported this. They've been very clear and transparent about this issue all the way through, and they are working very closely with the Department of Agriculture. We are very confident, as is the Australian government, that our disease-free status is maintained. There is no concerns about that, and we are undertaking every effort alongside DAF to give that reassurance to our markets.
That's Mark Harvey-Sutton, who is the Chief Executive of the Australian Livestock Exporters Council. As mentioned, the Territory's Chief Vet, Rob Williams, will be joining us in the second half of the program. If you have a question that you'd like to put to Rob, send it through on that text line 0487 99 1057.
G'day, my name is Floyd. I work in the Spanish mackerel fishery in the Gulf of Carpentaria. I love what I do and love my job, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
It is 20 to 1, and I've got a message here from SeaLink. It wishes to advise that the 1 o'clock ferry service today to the Tiwi Islands, I could only assume, it's been cancelled due to the low tide and change of vessel. We apologise for any inconvenience, so if you were rushing to get there on time at 1 o'clock, just be aware that it's been cancelled because of the low tide. I sent an email to SeaLink just yesterday to try and get an update on the MV Duffy, which is its ferry out at Groote Eylandt. I've seen some pictures of the MV Duffy, and it looks like that vessel is looking a bit worse for wear following Cyclone Megan. We're yet to get any update other than the good people at SeaLink are trying to get out to Groote and assess the damage is the language being used. But from the photos I've seen, I think the MV Duffy's seen better days. If we get any new information from SeaLink, I'll make sure I share it with you straight away. Now, one of our big stories on yesterday's Country Hour was that bird flu has been found in some dairy cows in the United States. How concerned are scientists about this? How concerned should the livestock sector be? We'll talk about this next after some Ted Egan. The man from Humpty Doo, that is Ted Egan. You are tuned into the Country Hour on a Wednesday lunchtime. Now, if you missed the program yesterday, then you might have missed the news that dairy cows in the United States have tested positive for avian influenza. The US Department of Agriculture says bird flu has been found in dairy herds in three states and is monitoring this situation closely. Professor Marcel Klassen from Deakin University, he studies bird migration and the spread of disease and says this is a very interesting case.
A lot of mammals get infected with avian influenza. And that's weird because avian influenza, as the name already implies, that is a virus that infects birds predominantly, but also mammals can get it. Now, for this virus to transmit amongst mammals, it needs to change, it needs to mutate, it needs to evolve further. But it is worrying that more and more mammals are getting affected, and it's all because of this avian influenza virus becoming so widespread. So although the chance of mammals to become infected is small, just because there are so many of these viruses around, more and more different mammal species become infected. And of course, with that, also the chance of that virus to further evolve and mutate and become more and more adapted to infect mammals and also for mammals to infect one another with this, then it's not a bird flu anymore, then it is a mammal flu, obviously. But in origin, it was a bird flu. With this virus becoming more and more widespread, the chances of it also becoming more prevalent in mammals only increases.
Is it particularly interesting that dairy cattle have been found with avian influenza in this case?
Yeah, I think so, because so far most mammal species that got infected, they were predators or scavengers, so they nibble on carcasses that they find and eat it, or they kill animals that are moribund and then ingest this virus, and that's obviously an easy way of attracting a viral infection. So but dairy cows, how do they get it? Well, I'm thinking maybe the drinking water. So on the premises where these cows were found to be infected, indeed, they also found wild birds, dead wild birds. So you can imagine a carcass ending up in drinking water, and then that way the cows becoming infected. That is at least, that's my best guess at the moment, how those cows could get infected.
This is where I get slightly nervous, but I feel it's an important next question to ask. If bird flu can find its way into dairy cattle, is that another step in the chain into finding its way into humans at a greater scale?
Well, the USDA claims not, because they obviously test the milk, and they have stepped up the biosecurity, so they test the milk and make sure that milk that is infected, that they take it out of the route to the consumers and destroy it. And then the other thing is the viral load. So it's not that you become infected by just one single virus. Yeah, in principle, that will be possible, but it is you need to get a fair number of viruses in your system before you truly get infected. Yeah, the risk is only increasing. And that is not just because of dairy cows, but it's just because of this virus becoming so prevalent, because it's really infecting a lot of poultry. So far globally, of this particular strain, half a billion chooks have succumbed, but also millions of wild birds have died because of it. It's just becoming more and more prevalent, and therewith, yeah, it's a numbers game. The chances of such a virus infecting a mammal and also infecting humans is small, but if it is so prevalent, yeah, the chances only increase.
So I suppose, what do you watch from here as someone who studies it and keeps an eye on a lot of this? What are you keeping an eye on?
Of course, I'm very concerned about the wildlife here in Australia because they are the ones that are most vulnerable at the moment. So I'm worried about the virus also coming to Australia and how we then respond to it and how it will spread across this continent. I'm also very worried about Antarctica because it's just made landfall in the Antarctic, and there, of course, you've got huge bird colonies, and I'm just hoping for the best. There's not much we can do, but hoping for the best that it will, the damage will be limited. And now on the longer term, I really hope that we come to our senses and start thinking more longer term on how should we manage our livestock industry. So I don't call for everybody to become a vegetarian or a vegan, but we need to be smarter about this. 70% of all birds are poultry at the moment in this globe. If we think about mammals, I think that wildlife in mammals is just a few percent of the biomass on this globe. Most biomass of mammals, that's humans, and is livestock. And we have to realize that there are so-called zoonotic diseases. So there are diseases that can spread between different species of animals. That should be a concern. That should be high on our agenda.
That is Professor Marcel Klassen, who is from Deakin University. He specializes in bird migration and diseases. He was speaking there to Warwick Long. If you missed our conversation yesterday with livestock analyst Simon Quilty, that's up on our podcast if you want to go and check that out.
G'day, my name is Heather Smythe. I'm a sensory scientist and flavour specialist, and my job is to make food more delicious. And you're listening to The Country Hour.
Now, back in 2020, the cattle industry successfully won a class action in the federal court, which ruled the Labor government's live export ban to Indonesia in 2011 was unlawful. And yet it's been almost 4 years since that ruling, and more than 200 claimants still have not seen any compensation, not a dollar. And the process looks set to be delayed even further, according to outgoing president of the NT Cattlemen's Association, David Connolly, who spoke to us on Friday.
Well, our lawyers contacted me yesterday and said that the government solicitor's office has requested an extension of time before they get back to the class action with regards to some crucial information, and they required an extension, and the further extension would take their time that they're allowed to get back to that action. It'll push it out a further 9 months. It would push it out to a total of 9 months. And I mean, our lawyers got the information that the judge required within 2 months, and they're just a small office in Canberra. Why can't the government solicitor's office, with all the power and money and people and all the resources they've got, why can't they do it in 2 months? Why do they need 9 months? Well, I'll tell you why they need 9 months, is they don't want to finish this action. They want to keep kicking this tin down the road.
That was David Connolly speaking to us at the NT Cattlemen's Association conference in Alice Springs. The owner of a cattle export depot in Western Australia says this ongoing delay in settling the class action is pure political bastardry at the highest level. These are the words of Paul Brown, who is one of the claimants yet to see any compensation. He's not happy.
I think it's a bit of a continued slap in the face for all of the claimants. The Solicitor General's office has had 6 months to prepare evidence for their argument against our case that the suspension went on much longer than what the Solicitor General as officers made and what the government has said, and that it was only 8 weeks and involved about 80,000 cattle. Our argument is that it actually affected us as an industry for years, and that's our counterfactual argument that we're making. They've had 6 months and haven't put anything to paper. You know, we're now they're asking for a three-month extension. And that's just disrespectful, and I think on behalf of the Solicitor General's Office, that they haven't put the resources or the staffing necessary for such a large and groundbreaking case. They haven't put the resources in that to get that to the judge in time. And that's a consistent failure to meet the deadlines throughout this claimant period since the determination was given by Justice Rears. And the Solicitor General has failed to meet these deadlines, constantly asked for extensions, hasn't provided evidence. It's just a continuation. And then, you know, we've made a counter offer to them late last year. And even Minister Watt said that he would give us an explanation of why that offer was rejected. He said, in due course, we'll provide evidence of why that was rejected. Well, we're still, you know, and now I think 3 months, getting on nearly 2 months, at least 3 months down the track, and we've heard nothing from Minister Watt about his explanation of why that offer was rejected either.
Well, the federal government has done some work on it because it did offer to settle the case, the class action, at $215 million. In hindsight, should you have accepted that?
Oh, that was an absurd amount of money. Our figures show that we're probably in the $1.2 to $1.5 billion for across claimants. We were happy to settle for about $890 million. That included the loss, the legal fees, and the interest on that amount. You've got to remember that the government's claim of, I think, of $210 million was a ridiculous amount of money in relation to the total global sum that we have prepared.
But at this point, do you think you'll ever see any of the money?
I do think we'll see the money. I think that once the Labor government is kicked out of office and the LNP comes back into government at the next election, then we certainly will have a better conversation. Now, that's not saying that the LNP shouldn't have sorted that out before the last election, but I have full confidence that come the next election, when Labor are kicked out of office and the LNP are put back in, that we will have a far better conversation with those adults in charge, and we'll get an outcome then.
But financially, you know, regardless of who's in government, they've still got to look at the financial situation that they're in and work out the best way to distribute money on behalf of Australian taxpayers.
Belinda, this has nothing to do with that at all. This has to do with Labor just doubling down on what they did in 2011. This is pure political bastardry at the highest level. 12 members of Cabinet that sit in the Cabinet at the moment were in Cabinet in 2011 when this decision was made. They have completely failed or continue to fail to take any responsibility for the actions that they took.
Now, Paul, you are one of the claimants in this class action. Roughly what would you expect personally once this is settled?
I'm not willing to go into that other than to say it's a large amount of money. And for us, it's a very large amount of money.
Is it millions? Just ballpark. Is it millions of dollars?
It would be in that part ballpark. It's a fair ballpark. But that's, you know, income that we've lost as a feedlot over the years purely because of the decision made by Joe Ludwig and Julia Gillard. And, you know, we all point the finger at Joe Ludwig as the minister, but understand he took his orders from Julia Gillard on the day. And she is just as responsible for this political bastardry and the economic demise that the industry found itself in at the time.
That is a fired-up Paul Brown, who is the owner of the Port Hedland Export Depot in WA's Pilbara region, speaking to Belinda Varaschetti. On the text line, someone here says, perhaps those who made the decision should pay from all of their private pockets to start with, as was just described. Our text 0487 99 1057.
G'day, that's Lindsay Smith here, the skipper of the fishing vessel Megan M. Just unloading our catch for the last 2 weeks. Good catch of gold band snapper, red emperor, and its variety of cods and things. And you'll listen to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. The Aileron Bush Weekend has been postponed because of the wet weather in Central Australia. But organisers, they're not too worried. They can see the positives and they have got a plan B ready to go.
We'll definitely have more competitors on the new date than we would have if we were running it this weekend because we have a lot of competitors that come from stock camps up on the Barkly, which, you know, some of those places are under a foot of water at the moment.
What is the new date for the Aileron Rodeo Bush Weekend? You'll find out very soon here on the Country Hour. As mentioned earlier, more than 100 cattle from the Territory died while on a ship to Indonesia. It looks like botulism was the cause. We'll be joined in a moment by the Territory's Chief Vet, Rob Williams. If you have a question that you want to put to the Chief Vet, send it through on the text line 0487 99 1057. Some great questions have already come through. We'll be putting that to the Chief Vet very, very soon. Stick around. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Billy Lynch is there this afternoon. And Billy, there's been more rain in Central Australia. What are some of the best figures up to 9 o'clock this morning?
Yeah, well, let's focus on Alice Springs region because, as people in Alice would know, there was some storms that rolled through yesterday evening. Big dump of rain. So Collier Creek had 52 millimetres. Bond Springs Turnoff, 38. Mount Sir Charles, 37. The smallest amount of rainfall we've got is 25 millimetres at the airport. So a lot of rainfall in a few hours. Definitely got the creeks and the rivers flowing after that.
Yeah, that's more rain on what has been a significant weather event since about Friday of last week. And there's still a flood watch in place for large parts of that region.
Yeah, correct. Because we've also had another 52 millimetres at Rabbit Flat in the Tanami as well. So I guess the overall situation hasn't changed. We haven't wanted to fiddle with that flood watch at the moment. But the rain through southern NT is having a temporary break. So for this afternoon, we're expecting some storms through parts of the Tanami and the Lassiter. But generally easing across the Alice Springs region. So we could see some heavy falls up in the Tanami, maybe even the Western Barkly District, and also getting up into the Vic River today. But then just focusing on southern NT for the time being, the rain is expected to sort of ease further and just be mainly concentrated in the Tanami tomorrow. Before the next weather system's going to move through Central Australia.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, we've got another sort of trough system that's going to move through. So we're expecting rainfall to increase across the southwest corner of the Territory on Friday, and then storm spreading back across much of southern NT on Saturday. But this time the focus of the heavy rain is likely to be in the sort of the Queensland border region, so the eastern Simpson and eastern Barkly district.
Okay, for the cattle stations along the Plenty, what type of rain? Let's talk millimetres and what's possible.
So, I mean, it is going to be with thunderstorms, so it's not, you know, the last rain event was a nice widespread cloud band. But I guess we'd be looking at falls of, I'm just thinking on my feet a bit here, but, 50 millimetres or so would be possible with these thunderstorms.
Gee. Just looking at the Alice Springs radar, looks like there's a little bit of cloud over Hart's Range as we go to where. Billy Lynch, have you seen the video of the waterfalls this week at Uluru?
I have not.
Go along to the ABC Alice Springs Facebook page. I've never seen a video of the waterfalls pumping so hard off Uluru. I mean, it feels like it's almost a yearly video. We get so excited when it's raining on the rock. But this is not just water trickling off Uluru. It's absolutely thundering down. It's incredible. Could be more to come. I can recommend that video to everyone. Further north, Catherine radar's out. What's happened?
Routine maintenance.
Okay.
Yep. So Tex are looking at it, giving a bit of open heart surgery, I think, today. It's an old radar, so it just needs a bit of a tune-up.
Just a bit of love. Okay. And for the top end over the next few days, what should people be aware of?
Scattered showers and thunderstorms with isolated heavy falls, basically.
Okay, no worries.
In a nutshell.
Yep. Thanks for your time this afternoon. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Thank you.
That is Billy Lynch at the Weather Bureau this afternoon. It is 10 past one. The Northern Territory's Chief Vet, Rob Williams, on your radio next.
This week on Landline, we're taking you on a long weekend getaway without leaving home. First stop, the Gulf of Carpentaria.
Sharks for miles. Like, there's so many sharks and dolphins and fish, and it's alive up there.
And we go four-wheel driving in Western Australia.
They use their right foot too much, use too much accelerator in soft sand, and they're just digging themselves in.
That's Landline, Sunday 12:30 on ABC TV and streaming on ABC iView.
More than 100 cattle from the Territory died while on a ship to Indonesia this month, and it looks like botulism was the cause. Earlier on in the Country Hour, you heard from Australia's Chief Vet, Beth Cookson. We're joined now this afternoon by Rob Williams, who's the Chief Vet of the Northern Territory. He is a very busy person this week, as you would appreciate. So, Rob, we really thank you for your time this afternoon. Tell us about, I guess, what you and your team have been doing since this incident was reported.
Yeah, thanks very much, Matt. And yeah, certainly happy to join you and hopefully make sure that we're getting the right information out there. But since the mortality event was reported on the boat, we were investigating since last week a mortality event in the Northern Territory that may or may not be related to the boat. So so the team's been busy taking samples and making sure that we process the samples through the laboratory as a high priority. But one of the things I probably urge is a little bit of caution around the diagnosis at this stage, because we're still working through that. Sometimes these diagnostic processes are difficult because you end up ruling out things rather than getting to the smoking gun straight away. So we're working closely with the Commonwealth government to make sure that we get as expansive as testing is done as possible.
Right. So it's assumed it's botulism, but that has not been confirmed.
No, it hasn't. But botulism is still, one of our more likely diagnoses. So, but there are a list of other things that we're still testing for. So, again, it's like forensics. It's quite thorough. You have to because some of these organisms that we are looking at, you can't test for them. For example, Clostridium botulinum, which causes botulism, is actually a normal inhabitant of soil, water. It's actually lives in the normal gut of cattle and other livestock. So just because you find it doesn't mean it caused the disease.
A question this afternoon from Paul, who says, how come the station that these dead cattle are from has not been quarantined?
And that's a good question. The diseases that we're looking at are normal endemic conditions, endemic diseases that occur in the Northern Territory. So we don't put people into quarantine unless we suspect an emergency or an exotic disease. It's got to be notifiable, and there is no indication whatsoever. In fact, we've actually ruled out a lot of notifiable diseases. And just to probably emphasise, there is no suspicion of either foot and mouth or lumpy skin disease. Australia remains free of lumpy skin disease and foot and mouth disease.
Which is good news and an important message. The property in question, however, I mean, what is happening to it at the moment?
Yeah, so we're working closely with the property to investigate the disease to come to a definitive conclusion of what it is. We're also suggesting changing some of the management practices there around vaccination. So, and that's a common message I'd like to get out across to all producers across the territory. We've had some recent weather events that you were just discussing with your previous interview. And sometimes when you get these changes in weather events, or animals change feed, or they get into something that they don't usually consume, you can get sudden outbreaks of sickness or death in cattle. So what we do is we recommend that people keep up to date with the vaccinations with their cattle. So, for example, there is a vaccine available for botulism, and we recommend that that's regularly given in the Northern Territory.
For our audience, can you remind them what botulism is and how cattle can get it?
Yeah, so again, it's a organism that unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, lives in the soil and lives in water and is a common inhabitant. And it also lives in the gut of cattle. But when there is a sudden change of weather or there is a change in feed, what happens in some susceptible animals, particularly those obviously not vaccinated, is that for some reason the organism decides to sporulate. And then that forms a toxin, which unfortunately leads to mortality events. And cattle, unfortunately, are very susceptible species to botulism. There's a lot of species that get botulism, including or can get it, including humans. But cattle, unfortunately, are probably the most one of the most susceptible species. So there's no actual event that you can say, oh, that caused it. But what we can say is in the Northern Territory, it's quite common because of there's a couple of things that contribute to it. Phosphorus deficiency in our soils up in the Northern Territory, and also protein deficiency at particular times of the year where the feed quality, especially lush, you know, quick-growing feed, lush feed, may be low in protein because of that quick growth cycle. Yep. And it's so there's a number of reasons why, and when cattle change diet, that can also be an onset. I mean, sometimes you can go years without seeing it, and then suddenly you get an event like this that is unfortunate, but it's expected.
Because this is a lot of cattle, more than 100 have died. Can you remember an event like this in your time, Rob Williams?
So I've only been in the Northern Territory a short time, but it's not unusual to have large mortality events in the Northern Territory. I can't comment on the boat. That's what happened with the boat is under investigation by the Commonwealth, so I'm only investigating what happens here on shore. Right. But, it's certainly not unusual to have a mortality event of significant number of animals. So it's just an unfortunate part. It doesn't happen every week, fortunately, but especially with the flooding at the moment, we do, there is a susceptibility to sickness and mortality events.
Are you surprised that cattle can show no signs at the Darwin port and be approved by a government vet, and then it seems just a few days later are dead?
No, that doesn't surprise me, because the veterinary checks that occur across the supply chain are obviously are important, but you can't, particularly with these known conditions like a botulism or some of these other endemic conditions that we see, tick fevers and what have you, they're not you can't see them there and then on the spot, and sometimes animals are more susceptible, whether it's a stress or a feed change, that can actually lead to these events. So, again, I can't comment on what happened on the boat because we don't have any jurisdiction, we don't have any samples or anything like that to look at. We're just commenting on what's happening here on shore. But, it's not acceptable for a mortality event, but, can we predict that sometimes these things happen? Yes, they can happen.
If you're tuning in, this is the Country Hour. Our guest this afternoon is Rob Williams, who's the Chief Vet of the Northern Territory. His team investigating this incident, which led to more than 100 cattle dying on board a live export vessel to Indonesia. I've got a text here, Rob. I'll share it with you. It says, Matt, we are long-term NT cattle producers and have lived experience of botulism. And it is very, very difficult to believe that 100 head of cattle die in a few days of botulism without having significant symptoms prior to voyage. And even then, 100 head in a few days would be a very big stretch. Has there been any communication from the commercial vet responsible in regards to this voyage? As producers, we are seeking accurate information and not a storyline to protect commercial interests. We need accurate information to ensure that this does not happen again. Not sure if you want to add any commentary to that, Rob.
Oh, it's a great question, but again, and I'm not trying to pass the buck, but the Commonwealth is responsible for investigating the mortality event on board the boat, so I can't comment. I can only comment on what's happening here on shore. And yeah, I agree with the sentiment of the question that sometimes these things are unusual. They're known events, so we know about them, but they can still present unusually. But botulism does cause rapid death. It's not something that where the animals are hanging around for a long time. And certainly the symptoms that the cattle showed here on shore in the yard were consistent with it, and they died quickly, which is what we expect from botulism. So botulism does tend to cause mass mortality events. So sometimes we get a little bit coloured by not remembering the history of botulism in the Northern Territory. So it used to be, before vaccination became commonly available, there used to be widespread outbreaks of botulism in the Northern Territory. And because of vaccination, that's enabled us to, manage it very appropriately and not to see these sorts of events. But every now and then you do get something in the system where either cattle haven't been as vaccinated as regularly as they should have been, or they've missed vaccinations. So some producers can sometimes think, oh, well, we haven't seen it for many years on our property, so we don't need to vaccinate. I'm not saying that's happened in this case. Mm. So sometimes you do just get, every now and then you'll get an outbreak to remind you of the importance of vaccination. And that's probably the key message from me, is that producers should, as much as possible, keep up to date with the vaccinations of their cattle. So we can, these are predictable events. They are known. Therefore, how about, we make sure that we prevent them rather than have to deal with them. But I certainly agree with the sentiment of that text, because that it is a difficult circumstance.
And just repeating, botulism has not been confirmed yet as the cause of these deaths. No. When would you expect that to get sorted?
So we've got to work through, it's like a forensic investigation, as I said, and we would we would like to get to that diagnosis sooner rather than later, but I'm not really expecting a definitive diagnosis until probably sometime next week, I'm hoping. I'm asking my team to move as quickly as possible, and we certainly ruled out a lot of conditions, so we can be very confident about what it's not. And as I've said before, we're definitely, Australia remains free of foot and mouth disease and lumpy skin disease and all the other nasties that we are concerned about from an emergency animal disease point of view. But some of these diagnostic tests, you're taking tissue samples, and you don't just throw a bit of tissue under the microscope. You have to cut the tissue properly to fix it in special preservatives. It needs to be sectioned properly. So it takes a while to do some of the testing. And botulism, because it's such a common organism, is a very hard thing to actually diagnose with a test. You can diagnose it on clinical symptoms and what you're seeing in the cattle herd. But to get the smoking gun test is sometimes... it takes a lot of elimination, a process of elimination, before we get there.
Okay. A busy day for you. We really appreciate you coming onto the Country Hour and sharing time for the audience. Thanks so much.
No, thanks very much for your time, Matt, and enjoy your afternoon.
Appreciate it. That's Rob Williams, who's the Chief Vet of the Northern Territory. I got a question here from Val on the text line, who says, Matt, is the NT's primary industry minister in direct contact with both the Indonesian trade and ag ministers, as there was a direct relationship in the past? If not, what has changed and why? It's a good question, Val. We'll put that to the Territory's ag minister, Mark Monaghan. We might try and get him on tomorrow's Country Hour.
Time for the family road trip.
98.
The big prawn.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yes. 99.
The big mosquito. It's a real one.
Is it? And 100.
Easy.
The big listen app.
Of course.
The ABC Listen app has a big array of road trip ready podcasts, radio, audiobooks, music and sport. Something for everyone.
I guess it has to be big to fit in all those podcasts.
Aww. For a big selection of audio entertainment.
Really, Dad?
Listen big. Download the free ABC Listen app today.
It is 24 past one. You are tuned into the Country Hour. The Aileron Bush Weekend is a wonderful Easter tradition in Central Australia. But unfortunately, as you've heard, it's been postponed this weekend because of all of that wet weather. The committee's been working hard over the last few days, though, to find an alternative date. It's now been set. Our reporter, Victoria Ellis, spoke to Secretary Alex Port.
Both the local producers who are bringing stock, but also Byron Renfrey, the stock contractor coming across from Cloncurry with the Barclay. Unclear whether that would be passable. It just wasn't going to be possible. to get the stock there. And then there was a number of other factors. You know, I don't think many people would have been overly excited about camping in wet conditions. And then also we had the issue of the surface being still probably, well, definitely would still be wet on the weekend, which just poses a risk for the animals and, of course, competitors. So all those factors combined, it sort of made the decision for the committee.
No doubt a bit disappointing for the committee and everybody who was planning on going, but the good news is that you do have a new date picked out. Can you tell our audience when that is?
Yeah, so like you say, very disappointing about this weekend, but yeah, we have a new date, which is the 27th of April. That's a Saturday, so it'll be all packed into a normal weekend rather than a long weekend. So the schedule will look roughly like we'll have the rodeo school on the Friday afternoon, that's Friday the 26th, followed by the usual roadhouse party at the Aileron Roadhouse on Friday evening, and then we'll get on the Saturday morning, we'll kick off with Motorcana and Gymkhana and then the rodeo Saturday afternoon, followed by the usual bush dance Saturday evening. So nothing on the Sunday. So it's all packed into one weekend, and that's the weekend of the 27th of April.
I have had a couple of people ask me, Alex, whether they will be able to get refunds if they can't go to the new date. Is that something that the committee is making available?
Yeah, we will do that in due course. We're just, as you can appreciate, just working through. But we've been in contact with our ticketing provider who said, yeah, we'll just get a list of contact us. If you'd like a refund, we'll get a list to the ticket provider and then those people will be entitled to a full refund, yep.
And do you think the new date will have any impacts on the number of competitors or anything like that at this early stage?
I think it's safe to say we'll definitely have more competitors on the new date than we would have if we were running it this weekend, because we have a lot of competitors that come from stock camps up on the Barkly, which, some of those places are under a foot of water at the moment. So we're hopeful that those guys will be able to make it down. So we would have more. In terms of spectators, well, we're not really sure. It could go either way. I think it's always been held historically on the Easter long weekend, which, you know, a lot of people may choose to spend that weekend going away or, you know, elsewhere or seeing family. So just having it on a normal weekend, we might see a few more people just pop up from town for the night or, yeah, so we're not really sure, but we're optimistic that it will still have a really good turnout. Just keep an eye out on our Facebook page for the most up-to-date information. Reach out to us there or via the email with any questions. And, yeah, we'll just be working through everything over the next couple of weeks.
That is Alex Port from the Aileron Rodeo Committee speaking to Victoria Ellis. So put that in the diary, folks. The Aileron Bush Weekend set now to be held on the 27th and 28th of April. The 27th and 28th, put that in the diary. It won't be on this weekend. It's already wet, and judging from the Weather Bureau, there is more rain to come, potentially this Friday. Just quickly, the Barkly Highway is currently closed, but it's due to open up in about half an hour's time. A little bit complicated here. I'll try and share this with you. Starting at 2 o'clock this afternoon to 6 p.m., the highway will open to high clearance four-wheel drives only going westbound. It was open to eastbound traffic this morning, but westbound traffic from 2 to 6 o'clock this evening. And the Stuart Highway, well, it's open, but there are various sections along that highway that have been affected by flooding. Parts of the road are damaged, so just be aware of that. Please drive to the conditions. A massive, massive thanks to Northern Territory's Chief Vet, Rob Williams, for coming onto the Country Hour to speak to you and to take your questions. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Keep it rural.